The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. There is a lot of information in the news cycle today, but what seems to be rising to the top is the self-congratulating Congress, both House and Senate, that are just so happy with their codification of a national holiday, Juneteenth. Evidently, the folks in Congress feel like they can do the ultimate virtue signal by making Juneteenth a national holiday. Now, let me just state straight up front that I'm not against a holiday for the emancipation and the freedom of slaves and the ending of slavery. In fact, I think that should be celebrated, the ending of slavery. But without context, without understanding what's actually going on, it appears that our betters in Washington, D.C. continue to be herded and funneled into a tight area where they're all moving in the same direction by an unseen hand that tends to push this country closer to division and chaos. And I believe Juneteenth is part of that plan. When certain nefarious things happen, they're always dressed up as good. They're always shown to be for the people. But this Juneteenth holiday, in spirit, I agree with it. But in execution or how they're pushing out this holiday, I disagree with it. If we want to celebrate the emancipation of slavery, I believe we should celebrate President Lincoln, when he signed the Emancipation Proclamation, because that is what freed slaves. I think we should celebrate those men that fought and died, hundreds of thousands of them, so that slaves could be free. I think we should celebrate the founders, like Thomas Jefferson, when in his own handwriting blamed King George for bringing slaves to the U.S. and wrote extensively that, in his own handwriting again, that slavery was bad for slaves and slaveholders. I think we should celebrate that in 1775, Philadelphia held the first anti-slave convention. Yes, that's right. I think we should celebrate the fact that 9 states, by the time our Constitution was ratified, had already abolished slavery. I think we should celebrate the fact that our founders knew that slavery was bad, and that's why they put into the Constitution a sundowning clause for the end of the importation of slaves. I think we should celebrate the fact that the Northwest Ordinance, when we got the Northwest Territories in Article 6, that they were always free, that the Ohio River was the dividing line between free territory and slave territory. I think that should be celebrated. Because slavery is a horrific evil that actually continues to this day. It continues to this day around the world, whether it's child slavery, sexual slavery where women are bought and sold, or just any type of slavery, which is practiced in several places in the continent of Africa today, continued to this day. So why is it that our Congress, our politicians, want to push forward a Juneteenth holiday. I'm not saying it's not important, but I think we need to look at the why. I think we need to look back at history and experience, and I think we need to understand what I believe, that this holiday is not designed to unite Americans, but to divide a nation for political purposes. Right now, flying in the city of Chicago administration building is a Pan-African flag, not an American flag, not a flag where blood and treasure had been shed so that all men could be free. No, what we have now is a progressive, liberal, Marxist agenda that seeks to undo our true history and replace it with brief keyhole satellite type pictures. And then they're going to show us what we should believe. And then they can funnel our lawmakers into the path that they want them to do. And I would say that's most likely a fatal funnel, where they're trying to push our lawmakers into decisions that will further divide this nation under the pretense of providing, quote, equity and social change. I believe in the American flag. I don't believe in the Pan-African flag. Not for the United States of America, because I've been to Africa. I've worked in Africa, and I've seen what goes on there. I've seen what goes on in Sudan. I've seen what has gone on in Rwanda. I've seen what has gone on in Somalia. I've been to Ethiopia. That was formerly a communist country that's working hard to erase that communist path, but they have some difficulties. I've worked in those countries. And I understand history. And if you really want to understand what's going on now with our mainstream media and why they are pushing racial division under the guise of racial equity, why they are trying to divide our nation instead of unite us, you don't have to look back too far in history. You could just look back, I don't know, a few decades to the Rwanda genocide, because an article put out in 2014 by the Human Security Center described what actually happened in Rwanda in great detail. And I'm going to go over this article with you real quick. And don't tune out, because if you listen to what happened in Rwanda, you might just want to metaphorically think about that Pan-African flag waving. You might understand what's being attempted in the United States of America in 2021. Because Rwanda was like many African countries, they were colonies, and they were the people of Africa, which are wonderful people, were manipulated so that those in power could keep and maintain power, so that those that were unscrupulous could obtain a fortune at the expense of the lives of everyday people. Because there were a plethora of factors that were responsible for this Rwanda genocide. And some of these can be dated back to over a century, when colonial powers entrenched a division between the Hutus and the Tutsis, a division further exacerbated in the decades that were to follow. Though the genocide was planned by the Hutu power government and executed by the military and armed militia groups, a large number of civilians were actively involved in the atrocities. Neighbors turned against neighbor, friends against friends, and even relatives against relatives. Most of the victims were killed with elementary weapons such as machetes, clubs, and axes, and it estimated that 130,000 people actively took part in the killings of over 800,000 people. So the obvious question is, how can such a high number of seemingly ordinary people become ruthless murderers and commit crimes which shock the human conscience? That can be explained because back during this time in Rwanda, there was a construction of a rhetoric of us versus them. Rwanda was colonized in Germany in 1897 before Belgium took control in 1916. And in the colonial administration, Europeans generally considered Tutsis as a superior group and thus collaborated with the Tutsi monarchy to rule Rwanda, where being Tutsi was commonly equated with a life of superiority and domination. Being a Hutu was associated with the life of inferiority and subordination. Tutsis were predominantly herdsmen, while the majority of Hutus were farmers. Although being often described as ethnic groups, listen to this. Hutus and Tutsis differed in occupation rather than in terms of ethnic attributes. They were the same in ethnicity. They just differed in what they did. Indeed, Tutsis and Hutus are often described as belonging to the same ethnic groups as they share language, culture, and religion. And moreover, intermarriage was not uncommon, and social mobility between the two groups was possible. Hutus acquiring large amounts of cattle could become Tutsis, whereas Tutsis with the decreasing number of cattle could become Hutus. And despite these assertions, the conflict is commonly portrayed as an ethnic conflict by the mainstream media. An ethnic conflict where group identities were artificially entrenched by colonial powers. The identities of the Hutus and the Tutsis were further constructed and reinforced by the Belgian colonialists when they introduced identity cards in 1933. Assigning the ethnicity of Hutu, Tutsu, or TWA to each Rwandan. Basically a formally ranked but flexible system, which offered some level of social mobility. Does that sound familiar? But became a rigid system divided by largely artificial ethnic delineation. Let me repeat that. In Rwanda, the powers that be were trying to divide the Hutu and the Tutsis into a largely artificial ethnic delineation. I don't know, maybe like white supremacists, Black Lives Matter, taking Americans that live in the greatest country in the world and telling them they're different, even though they are getting along and everything's going well for everyone. But going back to Rwanda back in the 60s, of crucial importance, following Rwanda's independence in 1962, the Hutu government maintained the colonial policy of identity cards. And they espoused anti-Tutsi propaganda and continued keeping of ethnic quotas. This historical context is highly relevant, as much of the propaganda surrounding the genocide drew upon the distinctions and policies implemented during colonial rule. The perception of us versus them was transmitted through generations and became institutionalized. Solutions suggested by one group to resolve mounting tensions were considered by the other side as a way for them to, quote, gain more power over us. Are we seeing that in America today? Are we seeing a power structure where true Americans come together and say, there isn't systemic racism in the United States of America? In fact, all Americans can succeed. And then the other side goes, oh, you're just trying to gain more power over them. They're trying to divide them and, quote, us. And in Rwanda, that turned into a disaster because in the decades to follow, those perspectives strongly influenced by the colonial period became reinforced and deeply entrenched into the fabric of Rwandan society. And it was a seed for protracted social conflict. And here in the United States of America, I believe we have a Democrat Party that are trying to plant the seeds of protracted social conflict. The seeds to separate American citizens, not along the lines of American citizen, but along the lines of ethnicity, along the lines of sexual identity, along the lines of political ideology. They're trying to separate people that love freedom into small groups that can be turned to conflict, cause chaos, and allow a small group of people to keep and maintain power. And what happened in Rwanda is that seed for protracted social conflict eventually led to genocide. And it was sown, and the Rwandan media was well aware of how to use it to its advantage. Because the Rwandan media sowed division with hate speech propaganda. There was one radio station, basically, that was taken over by the the power elite, the political elite. And it was used to propagandize a society to where there really wasn't ethnic division, but they were told there was ethnic division. And this small country is a test case, is an example in history for what happens with the effects of propaganda when they transcend from national to the international sphere. And as Hutu propaganda arguably misled the international community perceptions of the genocide as well. Because the propaganda alluded to atrocities committed by the RPF, which in turn contributed to notions that atrocities were the result of renewed warfare, ethnic tensions, or just simply chaos. And the French media portrayed the events as two-way genocide, and French troops were led to believe the Hutus were victims of the conflict. And nonetheless, international actors became fully aware of the true role of Hutu power propaganda was playing, and the force commander of the UN soldiers that were on the ground there to try and keep peace, General Romeo Dallaire, head of the UN peacekeeping force in Rwanda, requested, listen to this, the use of jamming equipment. He wanted to block the radio station. He knew the propaganda coming over the airwaves was driving a bloody genocide. Let me make this real simple. This, because of the history of the country and because of unscrupulous groups that pushed one group against another, groups that had gotten along, groups that had intermarriage, groups that were at peace, because of the propaganda, it drove these two groups to a frenzied hate of one another. I guess they were saying back then one life mattered more than another. I guess they were saying back there that there was some type of reparations owed. But in the end, they just backed a truck up into a town square and dumped out thousands of machetes. And because of all the propaganda, they let nature take its course, and over 800,000 people lost their lives. And former State Department official and now United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, has vocally argued since the genocide that the U.S. in particular could and should have done so, asserting that in the ending of crucial and deadly radioactive broadcasts with jamming equipment, it may have at least slowed the genocide and potentially saved thousands of lives. This is probably the only time I'll ever agree with Samantha Power. But in a blunt address of the jamming debate, the BBC stated, simply jamming the broadcasts and replacing them with messages of peace and reconciliation would not have had a significant impact on course events. Of course, history has shown that the BBC was wrong, and that we should have jammed the radio signals to prevent the genocide. Because that's what propaganda does. Propaganda, when wielded, is not designed to unite, it's designed to divide. Propaganda is not designed to help one group, but to clearly delineate the two sides. The proclamation for declaring the abolishment of slavery was issued by President Abraham Lincoln on January 1st, 1963, in the nation's third year of an ongoing civil war. Now, I don't want to lose you here. I'm shifting gears a little bit, but I'm going to show you how propaganda, or using events to manipulate people to divide, how you have to deal with this by looking back at actual history and actual experience. Because the document Abraham Lincoln signed, abolishing slavery, known as the Emancipation Proclamation, it declared that all persons held as slaves within any state or designated part of state shall be then henceforward and forever free. This was an important declaration. But this celebration of Juneteenth is because a General Granger arrived on June 19th, 1965, 2 years after this proclamation had gone into effect in the city of Galveston. And General Granger publicly read the General Order Number 3, which stated, "The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free." That's why people want to celebrate Juneteenth. And I've read article after article in the mainstream media talking about how this is just the beginning. And I'm going to read some of those to you, but I want to frame this out so people understand, because a lot of people are saying it wasn't the Emancipation Proclamation that freed the slaves. No, it was when General Granger got to Galveston and told them 2 years later, because no one was telling people the slaves were free. But what the mainstream media leaves out, and possibly because they don't know, because most of them are historically illiterate, is that when Abraham Lincoln made this proclamation in January of 1963, we were still in a civil war. And Texas was a Confederate state and remained that way until Robert E. Lee surrendered to the Union Army and they took over, and that was 1865. So November 6, 1865 was when the Civil War was actually declared over. So it's not a stretch that it took 2 years for a Confederate state that was in the middle of a war to be told that the Northern states' presidents had freed the slaves. This is just history. And I think it's important to understand history. I think it's important that the slaves are free. Again, like I talked about in the beginning, I think it's important that the first anti-slave convention was held in 1775 in Philadelphia. I think Thomas Jefferson's own handwriting is important, where he blames King George for the importation of slaves and talking about slavery being bad for slaves and slaveholders. I think it's important that 9 states, by the time the Constitution was ratified, had already abolished slavery. I think it's important that we learn from our past in order to move forward in the future. And I think it's important to see what's going on right now with this Juneteenth celebration. I celebrate the release of slaves. I celebrate the end of slavery. But like in the Rwanda genocide, the powers that be will use little dockets in history to try to further conflict. And that's why we have the Juneteenth holiday. Maybe a lot of congressmen don't know. Maybe my senator, Senator Cornyn from Texas, when he proposed this, I believe, doesn't know. But those of us that actually think and live outside the Beltway understand what's going on. We understand that the reason this is being pushed is because there is a group in our country that wants to move us away from American exceptionalism and try to balkanize us, separate us into groups like the Hutu and the Tutsis, and then dump out the metaphoric machetes and create chaos so they can keep and maintain power. Because in CNN today, there was an article by a 4-time Emmy-winning award TV journalist and host of the Run Tell podcast, Amara Shiavacampo, wrote today, there's a recurring meme series on social media known as What You Asked For Versus What You Got. In it, users post side-by-side photos of a beautifully advertised product they ordered, say a gorgeous dress, next to the disappointing garment they actually received, a threadbare slip. This week, Congress gave us the social justice version of that meme. Over the last year, Americans en masse asked for accountability for police shootings, voting rights, protections, and economic equality. We got the Juneteenth as a federal holiday. Early this week, the House voted overwhelmingly on the measures commemorating the day in 1865 when the last slaves learned they were free, some 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. Of course, she left out the part that they were still a civil war and the Civil War wasn't over and Texas was a Confederate state. But of course, that's just history. Why would Mara know that? She's too busy being a blue checkmark somewhere. But she writes, on Thursday, President Joe Biden signed into law making a spectacular act of performative activism. The symbolic and spiritual significance of a federal Juneteenth holiday can't be diminished. There are many who have fought for this moment, and we bow to the work of our elders tirelessly, like the 94-year-old Opal Lee, the so-called grandmother of Juneteenth, who has dedicated the last four decades of her life to this cause. She talks about Sheila Jackson Lee causing this law an elevation of joy. She talks about all this. And she says they're right to rejoice. I believe our ancestors joined them, but on a Missouri rep, as Missouri Rep. Cori Bush noted, Juneteenth is an and, not an instead. Posting on Twitter, Juneteenth and reparations. It's Juneteenth and end police violence. You see, Juneteenth wasn't signed into a federal law by Joe Biden to celebrate the end of slavery. It was designed to push more propaganda. Not that it isn't a good holiday, but to put it right in front of July 4th, to then go to people and ask them, are you supporting Juneteenth? Or are you supporting July 4th? Or are you racist? Are you a white supremacist? Which one are you going to support? They have them back to back. In fact, their next article talked about companies are celebrating Juneteenth in unique ways this week, and all the virtue signaling companies like Facebook, Coca-Cola, United Airlines are all talking about what they're going to do for Juneteenth and not give it any context. You literally have the propaganda pimps in the Democrat Party and the mainstream media that are pushing out Juneteenth before July 4th. And instead of just celebrating it for what it is, they're trying to make it and shape it to what they want to happen in the United States of America. And I believe we have to push back, because these folks seek to create division. Juneteenth is before July 4th. And there's nothing wrong with that again, except that you have a mainstream media that is now challenging people. Which one are you going to celebrate, Juneteenth, or are you a racist and going to celebrate July 4th? Why is it that people want to destroy our founding and destroy what made this country great? Freeman John Dyson, who was an American theoretical and mathematical physicist, statistician, and is known for his work in the quantum field theory, astrophysics, and several other sciences, one of the most brilliant men in the 21st century, gave us some cautionary words. He said, God forbid that we should give out a dream of our own imagination for a pattern of the world, or of the United States for that matter. This was said by Francis Bacon, one of the founding fathers of modern science, almost 400 years ago. Bacon was the smartest man of his time, with the possible exception of William Shakespeare. Bacon saw clearly what science could do and what science could not do. He is saying to the philosophers and the theologians of his time, look for God in the facts of nature, not in the theories of Plato and Aristotle. Dyson is commenting on what Francis Bacon said. And he says, I am saying to modern scientists and theologians, don't imagine that our latest ideas about the Big Bang or human genome have solved the mysteries of the universe and the mysteries of life. Here are Bacon's words again. The subtlety of nature is greater many times over than the subtlety of the senses and understanding. I think that's important to note. The subtlety of nature is greater many times over than the subtlety of senses and understanding. The reason is the subtlety of nature is what is actually happening in the facts. The subtlety of senses and understanding can be manipulated. These are my words, not Francis Bacon's or Dyson's. Can be manipulated by unscrupulous leaders and a mainstream media. They can be manipulated to drive one group against another. And I believe that our mainstream media and liberal politicians, and unfortunately some Republicans, just by their sheer inability to grasp the entire situation, are falling into a manipulation trap with a ratchet that only turns in one direction. It's trying to turn one American against another. It's trying to turn Juneteenth against July 4th. is trying to make people virtue signal. It says that this all started because of George Floyd, and I'm sorry George Floyd died. I think it was tragic. I don't agree with what that policeman did, but I also don't agree with the hundreds, if not thousands, of people that have been killed in Chicago, or the at least 100 a month that are dying by gun violence. I don't agree with that either, but the press doesn't talk about that, about those people of color that are dying. They only seem to cherry pick events and cherry pick history without giving its full context, like Juneteenth, to manipulate the subtlety of the senses and understanding and have us ignore the subtlety of nature and nature's God. It's important to pay attention, and I pray you do. Now, I'm glad that there's a holiday. I'm not glad that it's being done like this. I'm not glad it's not being taken into context. And I'm certainly not glad that people are trying to manipulate Juneteenth and make it something it's not. Who knows? Maybe that's just a subtlety affecting our senses and our discernment to distract us from a series of disconcerting events that have happened in China and Russia. I don't know, like the Chinese taking back Hong Kong and breaking the joint declaration, by the rapidly spreading viral pandemic of weaponized virus out of China, by Chinese mobilizations, increased readiness in military districts, masses of forces opposing Taiwan, border incidents with India, increased military readiness. Now, maybe that's, you know, that's just, we don't need to pay attention with our senses and understanding, do we? We don't need to pay attention to Russians rotating training mobilizations, Arctic deployments, claiming ownership of Arctic ice shelf, icebreaker construction, accelerated talk in Russia press of moving Northern Fleet to the Bering Strait. Now, we don't have to pay attention to that. We don't have to pay attention to Chinese and Russia asking their nationals to return home. I'm sure we don't need to pay attention to that. I don't think we need to pay attention to a 10,000-foot airstrip under construction in a phony wind farm in South Texas by a Chinese general posing as a billionaire under the premise of wind farm, which was used to purchase 200 square miles of land in Texas. I don't think we need to pay attention to the fact that Fauci's ties to China indicate possible penetration of U.S. vaccine-making process and national public health infrastructure, and shows that a biowar issue has larger focus. Now, let's not pay attention to that. Let's pay attention to the equity here in our country, the supposed inequity, because we have to make this country fairer. Oh, and we also have to realize the greatest threat to this country was climate change. Although Freeman John Dyson disagreed with scientific consensus on climate change and believed that some effects of increased CO2 levels are favorable and weren't taken into account by climate scientists. And he was also skeptical about simulation models and used to predict climate change, arguing that political efforts to reduce causes of climate change distracted from other global problems that should take priority. And he signed the World Climate Declaration entitled "There's No Climate Emergency." See, this brilliant man who died last February in 2020, one of the most brilliant men to live, understood that there were political efforts to reduce the causes of climate change, those efforts distracted from other global problems. The same way efforts to try to balkanize our nation and separate us along color, sexuality, or whatever you want to say, will distract us from true problems that threaten our freedoms here in the United States. I find it really interesting, and I'll close with this, and I hope you just think about Occam's razor, because the simplest solution usually is. In a nation that elected the first black president twice, in a nation where there's Oprah Winfrey can rise from poverty to a billionaire, in a nation that lifts up people of all races and color, where Dr. Carson is a neurosurgeon. And if you read his story, it's fascinating. He overcame a lot of obstacles. You see, the one thing we have in common in this nation is that we all have the equal opportunity, and it's not predicated on skin color and hasn't been for a very long time. So why in 2021 does an unscrupulous party want to go back and separate the United States of America and tell people that our biggest problem is white supremacists, when I'm sure there's a few out there, but I don't know them. And I'm sure most people don't. But I do know there are threats to our nation. I just mentioned a few. I do know there are threats globally to our nation. So when we all gather around and have a Juneteenth and celebrate the freedom here in the United States of America and the end of slavery, I think it's just as important to celebrate the country that came together that allowed that freedom to be abolished. And those wise men that founded this nation, don't let their legacies be interpreted by people that only want to divide one group from another to keep and maintain power. We live in the greatest nation in the world. It was founded by God's grace, and by God's grace, I pray it will continue to stand for freedom for all the world to see. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Go out and have a blessed weekend. Enjoy your family. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate the end of slavery. Celebrate the birth of the greatest nation the world has ever seen. Because that is the way that we can keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line. Freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times. Standing on the edge of a revolution. Just obey your secret safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.